The Catholics of Oz is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give.
You're listening to episode 116 of The Catholics of Oz. The Catholics of Oz is a show where we discuss faith, culture, and what's been happening from an Aussie perspective. Whether it's synods or science, apostolates and apps, providence or productivity, you can hear it right now on The Catholics of Oz. Hello, I'm Lindsay Sant, and welcome to episode 116, being recorded in between Good Friday and the Easter Saturday Vigil Mass. We're doing this on a Saturday morning, so we are right into the Easter Triduum at the moment. And I am joined today by my lovely sister, Caroline Knight. Caroline, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. It's a beautiful sunny Saturday morning and we're in the middle of the Triduum and yeah, I'm very excited. It's a lovely time of the year, beautiful time of the year.
I'm disappointed. You know how I sometimes have a nickname for you? I thought of one after.
Okay.
You don't want to introduce
Take
you.
Take two, go for it.
Right, so introduce my sister, Fagoli Fingers, Caroline.
That was like a gangster.
Yeah, I know, gangster, yeah.
Yes, and I have been making Fagoli. Yeah. That's through traditional Easter sweet from Malta. Yes.
Yum, yum.
It's a process that takes me a few days. Yeah, I'm on day three, so yeah.
She's been right into it, yeah, hence the, and Caroline knows how to perfectly get the right mix of almonds and lemon and icing
so
and biscuit.
Good.
I can taste it. We didn't get to enjoy it till tomorrow.
It's for real tomorrow.
Yeah.
Lino, you'll have to pop over and get some.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. When you eat Fagoli, you truly know that Christ is I'm just saying, right? That's how good it is.
Yes.
It's one of the best.
Yes. Even my kids love it. Yeah.
Everyone looks forward to it now. So for Christmas, it's my pudding.
Yes.
For Easter, it's the Fagoli. It's your Fagoli. Yes. So that's
get one celebration each.
That's it. Yeah. Yep. And also joining us is Lino Sabol. Lino, how are you today?
I'm good, guys. I'm good. Yes. Fagoli. Oh, yes. We had it one time when we were in Malta. And yeah, it was very nice. Very nice. I had to be careful because I can't eat a lot of sugar, but yeah, it's Fagoli.
It's very sweet. It doesn't count.
Exactly.
It is super beautiful. Sweet. It's basically sugar and flour and sugar and almond. That's all it is.
Sugary hit, sugary niceness.
Right, why not? Right from the top of the food pyramid.
I had a taste this morning on a bit of a sugar high right now.
Yeah, so good.
Cool.
So good. Yeah. All right, let's roll on then. So first of all, if you're new to listening to The Catholics of Oz, welcome. You can subscribe to the show by listening on Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or your favorite podcast player. Don't forget to give us a 5-star rating and some positive feedback so that we can hear from you when we are and also reach new people. SQPN also hosts The Catholics of Oz on YouTube. You can subscribe there. So don't forget to hit the bell to get new notifications when any episodes of this show or all of the other great shows on StarQuest are released. So with that, let's get straight into it and let's discuss Faith Beyond Borders.
Well, I'm actually feeling rather good about this. I think we've all arrived at a very special place, eh? Spiritually, ecumenically.
How do you make somebody love you without affecting free will?
Welcome to my world, son. You come up with an answer to that one, you let me know.
Yes, I had to work very hard to pass Latin and theology.
Oh, quite. Those are, of course, the most important things.
Oh, yeah.
I'd sit this one out, Cap.
I don't see how I can.
These guys come from legend. They're basically gods.
There's only one God, man. And I'm pretty sure he doesn't dress like that.
So recently, on the feast of St. Patrick's Day, we've been doing this for about 5 years now, which has been great. Caroline and I, this time, we went to the Patrick Oration. So it's that time of the year where we get to talk about it. So I love doing this. This year, the Patrick Oration was at the Australian Catholic University at the Teresa of Kolkata building, wasn't it, Caroline?
Yes.
Which is a amazing building.
Beautiful.
The views of the cathedral from the windows were just stunning. And we were blown away to being there. This is the yearly speech that Archbishop Comensole, the Archbishop of Melbourne, delivers. And he'll deliver a message. He might set a direction for the Archdiocese. He might inspire us to think about a particular focus for the year or for the time being. We've had things like parish renewal, young people was last year. This year it was, without saying it's a, so it is about St. Patrick's Cathedral, but it's about a lot more than that as well. So we'll dive into it. But we had a really nice evening, I think, Caroline.
We did.
We enjoyed ourselves.
Very nice.
Yeah.
I think this was my favorite one, actually.
It was one of the best ones. Yeah. Not that there were, any of them were bad.
No,
this was
just
probably
the experience, I think.
Something special. Yeah.
Yeah.
There was a bit of a different setup for you guys. I saw on the stream.
Yeah. Instead of a sit down dinner.
Sit down with your dinner thing. Yeah. Did you guys eat before you had the, and then you moved to another room?
We certainly did eat. We ate a lot.
So I thought, wait a minute, you guys are not around a dinner table. And I'm not saying there were waiters walking around giving water and all that. But I thought, okay, this is a different sort of setup. So good.
Yeah. And can I just say, whoever decided to put sushi out, inspired decision.
Thank
well
you.
Done.
Yes.
Right. Okay.
We're happy to come back next year.
Wow.
Yeah, it was great.
Cool.
And on a serious note as well, I want to thank Annie again for inviting us.
Thank you, Annie.
Annie, we love you. You are so wonderful. So thank you for bringing us again, because not only do we love being there to hear that speech in person, but we love talking about it as well. Mm-hmm. And we will be talking about it every year for the rest of the rest
how
of our
many
lives.
Times we are invited.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Even without invitation,
without
we'll
invitation
talk about
too,
it.
You're right.
It.
Yeah. Yes. Even
yeah.
if we don't.
Yeah, we're not gonna blackmail. Yeah. No. Yeah.
Gay crashes.
That a wow. podcast that tries to blackmail the archdiocese. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Nice. And that's the last episode. Everyone, thanks. Goodbye. It's a wrap. Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. We're really. It's been a couple of weeks now. I think 2 weeks.
It's been about two weeks since we
attended.
Wow. Time flies.
We've been holding on and wanting to talk about it. Caroline and I, we're talking about it continuously afterwards as well. We actually got interviewed briefly at the end as well.
We did.
For the Melbourne Catholic.
Surprise.
Which was lovely. Yeah. So it was nice to actually be able to have our thoughts that we were thinking about recorded there and published there as well. So that was lovely. So we're grateful for that opportunity.
Yeah.
So with that in mind, let's get into it. I might just go through, I've divided it into maybe three parts. Now, I'm not entirely sure what the structure is, but there are three things I guess I want to draw out of it. So starting with the very beginning, Common Soli spoke about, he talked about Nick Cave, the musician. Now, we're all familiar with Nick Cave, aren't we?
Yeah.
Australian musician.
Of course.
Yep. So I don't know how to describe his genre of music, because it's all kinds of things, isn't it?
I'd just say it's Australian. Yeah. Like, it's a distinct Australian flavour.
Yeah. Do you describe it as alternative? I wouldn't describe it as rock.
Alternative, like a little. I think it's a lot of genres if you're going to pick. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, almost sometimes experimental. Like I've heard a few of his songs. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe ballads is probably close sometimes, that kind of theme. Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, and I've seen this before, that he has some kind of a connection to Christian spirituality.
I didn't even know that.
Hasn't quite.
I didn't know Nick Cave was spiritual in a way.
Yeah, he has spoken about Christ before. I think I don't know much about his biography, but I'm assuming he must have had some kind of a Christian upbringing.
Which I
actually
want to go and read now
Cool.
Yeah, I'd be curious. And I know that he's spoken about Christ quite a bit in interviews and things like that. Not necessarily evangelizing, but just speaking about his connection, his sort of understanding. So he has a connection to Christ and the Christian story, but hasn't really, I think Archbishop Common Soli said, hasn't found an ecclesial landing yet, which means he hasn't anchored himself to a church community of any kind. But he certainly is open about talking about Christ in what he does. He's had a life of ups and downs, and he's spoken about his loss. Mm. He sadly has lost two of his sons. They've both died at different points in his life. And Archbishop Common Soli was talking about that theme of loss but not lost, if that makes sense. So he brought that up. And he talked about Jesus in that story as well, about making that connection to Christ, about speaking about faith in terms of how Nick Cave spoke about faith in terms of loss but not lost, and how Christ poured himself out. Christ's loss was to pour out his entire life for all of us. This is how it starts. That when Jesus, for example, all he had to give was in his poverty was his flesh. Although he was God, he didn't consider himself, equal with God in that sense as a person. And that was in that humility of living in the human condition and giving all he had to give, which in this case was his body, was his flesh. So in his poverty, he didn't have possessions to give. He didn't have anything to give but his very self. So he pours himself out for us in his life. And so that pouring out, we see it in the Last Supper, and we see it on the cross as well. The one thing that he can give is himself. So he gives so that he has nothing left by the time that he dies. So we see that loss that, and I hope I'm putting this the way the Archbishop was trying to convey it as well. So when Christ says, "This is my body, this is my blood given for you, poured out for you," and so on, that word oblation is a word we hear sometimes in liturgy. Oblation means to pour out until there's nothing left. So we can say for sure that Christ gave everything he could for us. He didn't hold anything back. He gave everything and left nothing behind. And that was for our sake. And so what Archbishop Comasoli then did was make the connection that there are people now today, all over the archdiocese to start with, before I get to the cathedral, who experience this when they go to communion or when they go to adoration. And he made the specific connection to adoration, which happens on Thursday nights at the cathedral. Now, Lino, you and I used to go to this quite a lot.
Yep.
When we were younger, then with our young families for a while.
Yeah.
We know it as 6:30 Holy Hour, right?
Yes,
so we used to go to 6:30 Holy Hour for quite some years, for quite a while. And what Archbishop Comasoli was saying is that, and I'll quote him here, he said, "Each Thursday evening in St. Patrick's Cathedral, this transfiguring reality is shown to the assembled people who have come from the dispersed regions of our city. On any given Thursday, around 100, mostly young people, come through the doors of St. Patrick's to gaze on Christ. The 6:30 Holy Hour is the sacramental presence of Christ presented in a form for everyone to see. We see the exposition of the Blessed Sacrament. It's the, and these are the Archbishop's words, it is the exposing of the broken body of Christ in the form of the broken bread of life. The word itself implies a vulnerability and nakedness. We instinctively want to cover up things that are exposed. But Jesus says, 'Be with me and let me be seen.'" He says, "That is indeed unnerving. That same broken body revealed in the broken bread is also remarkable to behold. We are not left alone when we have come before the Blessed Sacrament, but are invited to see the one who gave himself for us and to know that we are loved by him." And he talked about how later on, and I think it's right here, he says, in that hour, it might especially be a yearning for atonement or for, as he calls it, at-one-ment with Christ as well. So he says, at this point, we all come with our yearnings. People who go to adoration, they go with their yearnings, their deepest yearnings of life. And as Christ pours himself completely out in that exposition, we receive into our emptiness, into our yearning. So it gives everything to fill our own lives as well, and to help us to find that meaning in our lives that's only found in Christ. So I thought that for me is part one of the oration. Did either of you want to comment? I'm just throwing you guys in the deep end here. Did either of you want to comment on that first part before we move on? Don't put your hands up at once.
There's so much in it. I think if I speak, I'm going to go over what you're going to say next. So I think maybe go through it and maybe we'll discuss further.
Yeah, that's okay, because I know that there are thoughts that you shared before that will come up soon. Yeah, all right, let's do that. Lena, did you want to add anything, or you want me to keep going?
Yeah, like I was saying at the start, I never knew Nick Cave was finding his spirituality in Christianity in a sense. Mm. And a lot of artists out there are Christian, they don't really express it as much because of the industry, in a sense, what they are, where are they are, and what they do. And it's great to see that he's showing that, the vulnerability that he has.
Yeah.
That goes for all of us. So not just Nick Cave, everyone, all of us. And you'll probably talk about it later soon enough, but now sports people and everything, all that, celebrities and all that stuff, they have their Christianity in them. But because of where they are in the industry and what they are being polarized as, they don't want to express it as much. And it's good to see. It's good. And it makes sense. It makes sense. If you're, it's that genre of you're a heavy metal band. You're a Christian, but you're singing all this stuff. It's a sort of a different thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's interesting you should go there, because the next part two, for me anyway. Okay. Of this, it leads into this, right? Going a bit broader than where you started. So just going a bit further out, extending the circle a little bit. he brings up, not straight away, but he brings it up during his during the oration, four letters, S-B-N-R.
Yes,
Caroline, here's a test. Do you remember what they stand
for? Yeah, spiritual but not religious. And that's where I'm going to go.
10 points. Yeah, good. All right, great. Yeah, so we're all on the same wavelength.
We're on the same page, so, yeah.
Yep.
So he said, from time to time, he said he's observed himself. And I'm paraphrasing here. I haven't got it in front of me this little bit. But he observes people, like the people going in for 6:30 holy hour. And then he sees people driving by in cars and people on the 109 trams going past the cathedral. And he wonders, what are they seeing people do when they walk in? What are they observing as people pass by, as they pass by the cathedral? And he had some questions there. Do they see these people who are intentionally diverting from the streetscape into the cathedral? What are they thinking about those people who divert into the cathedral? And do they know that they're welcome to enter as well? And that's where that kind of starts off. And he goes into talking about how the Zoomers, or Gen Z, as we might call it as well, there's this generation of Zoomers, a small one, who are going to the cathedrals and going to different parts of the archdiocese. He mentions this as well. There are other communities as well who also do adorations or whatever else, where you see they might be predominantly young. But there's a whole big group in there that identify as spiritual but not religious. And I see this a lot as an RE teacher in a school, where when you get a class to a point where they're comfortable enough to talk about their spirituality, a lot of them will say things like, I think there's something out there, but I don't know what it is. Or I believe that my deceased family members are waiting for me somewhere when I go. So that's the spiritual but not religious part, right? Because they haven't anchored that into a connection with Christ or a connection, to be honest, with any other religious tradition. And that's not to criticize that, but what he's saying is sometimes we anchor our hope in that, in the idea that saying, oh, great, so at least if they're spiritual, there's an openness to faith. And that in itself might be true. But what he's saying is that the trend, though, is for people to be moving further away from the spiritual. And if they're moving further away from the spiritual, they're moving away from religious as well. Mm. So we can't take comfort and just sit on our laurels and say, all right, at least they're spiritual, there's that, we're good to go. And that's going to be the go for the next 30, 40, 50 years, because in truth, it's not. And we're not talking about a hopeless state of decline of faith. What I saw him saying was that challenge for us to keep the fire going. And that's caught it towards the end of the oration, is that we do need to keep the fire going, not to rest comfortably in SBNR, and be like, okay, that's fine. At least they're spiritual. It's not enough. I was thinking as I was reading, just to divert for a second, on the thresholds of faith that we've been talking about recently as well. And so we gave an example of a person in our last episode who is probably more towards the R than the S in the way that they've been speaking about their faith journey and so on. But when he was talking about how we attract SBNR to the faith. And when I say attract, I mean like advertising gimmicks, whatever, but like how they find that this has something of value to them that will help to give them meaning in their questions as well. What are we doing to create that threshold of trust, which is the very first one? So it can lead into curiosity and seeking, but to discipleship. What are we doing today that will help to do that? So he sets out that context of how there are people who do things that might seem religious, but it doesn't necessarily have a religious connection. He said, for example, the cathedral is used for weddings a lot and baptisms, but they're not necessarily always people who are committed to faith and discipleship and so on. The cathedral just happens to be a beautiful, iconic place to have a wedding, right? We know that. And that's not rare. That happens a lot where people will use cathedrals and nice old iconic buildings for weddings, because the photos look great and it's a big occasion and so on. And not to criticize people who do that at all, there's not a shred of criticism. Is the cathedral and any of these markers of faith in our city, are they just icons now? Is that all they're going to be? Just an icon of a relic from a time gone past? And so that's a question we really need to be asking ourselves now. He said, for example, the SBNR speaks to the phenomenon that around 2/3 of Australians say they believe in God or some higher power, but fewer than 1 in 10 are actually engaged in a religious practice. Attachment to the traditional idea of God is waning, but the desire for a life of meaning remains, expressed in practices such as office meditation, gym yoga classes, social justice actions, and pilgrimages. And he noted that more people undertook the Camino Santiago last year than any other year in history. So there is still, whether people decide that they're religious or not, they will never not search for meaning. That search for meaning will always be there. Mm. And I remember, going back to high school discussion, students have asked me before that they said, do you think there'll be a time when religion will stop being practiced, where it will stop? And my response is, as long as there is a search for meaning,
yes,
there will always be a religious practice.
Yeah.
Because we're all going to pin that search somewhere. And I guess for us, from the oration, from this second part of the oration, we shouldn't be, how do I put it? It shouldn't be accidental that people, I'm searching for meaning and they stumble into a church. It shouldn't just be by accident that they get there. All right, the fact that they get there is great. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And they, all right. The theme, one of the themes I got from the Archbishop's oration was that it needs to be more than an accident. And this is me thinking now beyond just what we heard on the night, right? This is me having had a couple of weeks to think and reflect on it a bit more. That the deliberate welcoming, the intentional welcoming, the intentional creation of trust and curiosity, so that people can find a place where their needs and their meaning can be answered, where they can connect with what we started with, which is the meet the Christ who poured out everything for you and be filled by it. That's probably me adding another paragraph to the oration there. Sorry, I didn't mean to rewrite the Archbishop's speech, but that's just my reflection going further. So that's my very brief, and there's a lot more in there, but that's my very brief summary of part two. Do either of you want to comment on that before I move to the next bit, probably one of the most important bits?
Yeah, I was thinking spiritual but not religious. I think that happens too when, and you see it a lot, when people say, I've been baptized, but we never went to church. Perhaps their parents did go to church when they were younger and they stopped going to church, but they felt an obligation to get their children baptized, but they didn't follow on and take them to church. So there's a bit of a gap there where they were baptized, they are Catholic in name, but they hadn't followed on, like their parents perhaps hadn't taken them onto church further, and maybe they didn't get the other sacraments, or they did have the other sacraments, but then they stopped going to church, or they just make it for like tradition reasons or cultural reasons, but maybe their family, you know, maybe their parents decide they don't want to go to church anymore, so there's no follow on. And they feel maybe that there is something, but they just don't feel a need to practice, or life gets in the way or whatever. But then I was thinking by extension, us as parents have a real duty to really teach our children, teach them why the faith is important, answer questions, and really guide them that they don't have to be spiritual but not religious, like not searching. Yeah. They have somewhere to go. They have an answer. They have somewhere to find answers. So I feel like perhaps generally, it's a big, broad statement, but generally in society, that is happening a lot. Like I see it a lot, especially when there are kids who are making their Holy Communion or whatever with my children, and I only see them on that day. I never see them again. How many times have you gone to church and you've seen children being baptized? You've never seen them before. Yeah. All their family come. The church is full for that day, and you don't see them again. Yeah. So,
and just to add to that, Caroline, we've been going to Easter Masses, right?
Yes,
Or the Triduum. A lot of people have been turning up that we've never seen before, and thank God they are, right? Yes. But it's the same thing. How do we ensure that they're welcome and they're welcome to come again and again? And
we want them to come. We want the churches full. We want everybody to come all the time. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And not even because it's a numbers game.
No. The numbers. We want people to be full.
People to find Christ. Exactly. So
there's an education gap, I think. Yeah. I feel like not education as in like you have to learn theology, whatever, but there's a teaching, a passing down of the faith, I think, not just in your family, but if you speak to other people, perhaps you can fill them in, have a discussion about it. If someone's curious, talk about it, all that kind of thing, to educate other people about what you believe and all of that. Yeah. That's just what came to my mind when I was hearing the spiritual but not religious. We all know somebody who's like that.
Yeah, we do. You know,
my own husband, he's not a practicing Catholic. He was baptized and Anglican, and he hasn't really practiced, but he will come to church with us and do all that. But he's still searching as well. Yeah.
And again, it's that there's a threshold of trust that's there, some curiosity. There's that, And it's, we don't rush anyone on their journey, don't we? We just continue inviting, making welcome, and so on. All right. On that theme, I wanted to move on to the, what I'd say is maybe the third part of the oration, which is the discussion of St. Patrick's Cathedral, which I think our ears pricked up quite a little bit, didn't we, listen to this part. So essentially, he was talking about how it's a light to the city. It sits on the eastern edge of the city, which is has a lot of very Christian, a lot of Christian imagery as well. And he was saying that there are times, for example, where the cathedral has meant something to someone, to a lot of people in different parts of their lives. For example, he, I'm just trying to find the little paragraph that I was looking for. He said, for them and for some, many others, St. Patrick's has been the house, the home, the local church in Melbourne since its foundation stone was laid in 1850. Located on Eastern Hill at the edge of the city grid, sitting like Gethsemane on the eastern edge of Jerusalem, the cathedral is the mother church of our archdiocese. A mother gathers and protects, a mother sacrifices and teaches, a mother heals and binds together. So it goes on to say that those who come to her each year are remarkably various. Any given Sunday, about 1,300 Mass goers pass through her doors. At times, such as during the Paschal Triduum and at Christmas, upwards of 10,000 people seek the shared communion of worship and prayer. There are the rich migrant communities who gather within her walls on an annual basis. Many school communities have their opening or graduation Mass there. Any number of small faith groups and Catholic organizations make it an annual place of pilgrimage. Long lines of penitents stretch along the pews for reconciliation, prayerfully awaiting mercy. St. Patrick's is wedding central at a time when the bottom has fallen out of church weddings. So we talked about that before. Baptism numbers are also high. It's where the major archdiocesan liturgies occur. The Chrism Mass, the Rite of Election, which we spoke about, I think, in an episode last year. The Mass for marriage anniversaries, World Youth Day commissioning, the annual St. Patrick's Day schools Mass, ordinations, state funerals. She is a symbol of the beauty of God and a location for witnessing to the beauty of faith, as we saw in the recent Great Women of Faith exhibition, which had happened a few weeks ago as well. He said there are those who simply wander off the streets seeking a moment of sanctuary within her walls, the poor and vulnerable who come looking for safety and solace. And among all those faith seekers are the loads of tourists who daily spill out of buses into her glowing light, wide-eyed and in awe of where they have found themselves. So he talks about how it's been the gateway into the city and an undoubted icon of Melbourne. He said, however, no major works have been done on the cathedral and its environs for more than a quarter of a century. St. Patrick's needs some structural love and care after all these years. She's not a fixed edifice, but a living environment, not a static building, but a dynamic precinct of faith. And it is time to explore seriously the ways that she might live and flourish as a true light into the city for generations to come. So this is the part that we were listening intently to, because now we see the a bit of future direction being talked about as well. So he was saying that, yes, you'll see some scaffolds going up in the next few months too, so that the structural work of St. Patrick's Cathedral can be done. But it's more than that as well. It's also about how the cathedral can shine Christ's light into the city and into the rest of the archdiocese. For that is what a light, Christ's light into the city needs to be, a place of transfiguration in a world that yearns for more. So he was saying there are questions to be asked. How does St. Patrick's offer answers to those who are yearning for more? What are her pathways that people seek and divert towards? Where might people look so as to find God? How is she a place both tethered to the earth and yet reaching beyond? We have to look at what kind of light St. Patrick's needs to be. So these are the questions we need to ask of ourselves, for the churches is the pilgrim people of God, Christ's body in community, and not a building. Who do people meet when they meet us at the doors of our mother home? Do they see Christ's face, hear his words, witness his actions? Are we the kind of light we need to be so that people of our city may come and see? This is the big task now of discerning how St. Patrick's Cathedral, as the shining light of Melbourne and of their archdiocese, can project the face of Christ and welcome people in so that they can encounter Christ and find help with their own search for meaning, with their own questions, and ultimately to find this Christ who poured himself out for all of them so that they can be filled by his love as well. With that in mind, let's do a bit of a whip around the podcast. So, Caroline, your thoughts on part three?
Yeah, there is nothing like a beautiful cathedral like our one in Melbourne. How drawn do you feel to it when you go there? When you see, I've been watching some services from there, from home, and I just want to actually be there because I feel drawn. It's a true beacon of light, a true drawing to Jesus himself. When you go into the cathedral, any church, but the cathedral surrounding is something special, and it's where you can connect spiritually, physically to Jesus. He gave himself for us. We were able to make beautiful places to represent him, and it's truly somewhere we are drawn to. And yeah, I just think, yeah, it's just, it really made me reflect. I never really thought of it that deeply before, but you do feel it's somewhere special, some place special, because Jesus is there. It's a representation of everything he's done for us. Archbishop Peter was saying, there's loss, but we're not lost. There's Jesus. He had some loss, but out of it came something amazing. Something beautiful rose out of Jesus' sacrifice for us, including beautiful cathedrals where we can go and connect with him. That was really what I got out of it.
And they say that when you step off the street into a church or into a cathedral, it should be like you're somewhere else.
You feel like you're in heaven. You feel like you're just...
It should be a reflection exactly that, of being with Christ at least.
And the hardest part about living where we do is that it takes a bit of effort to get to the cathedral.
It can be.
But on the counter to that, and because Leonova, and we've all experienced this, it is the hardest part. But it's also the best part because we have to make the effort. We have the advantage of having to make the effort to get to the cathedral.
But what a reward.
So I feel
what
like it means more for us. It actually means more. Leno, do you want to, maybe I'll just get you to think about those years when we were going as young adults, and when we were going, even taking youth groups to the cathedral for adoration on Thursday nights, and we had to make that effort to travel as well. Any thoughts on the oration or connecting with that, with those times as well? What do you think?
Look at St. Patrick's and the cathedrals and the connections we have, and the trips we did with the youth group and ourselves was very special. Majority of the time was cold, but when we get to the cathedral, you feel that warmth inside, not for more the outer part of your body, but the inner self, the warmth and the love. Because as you pray in there, it can echo, it can be cold, it can be all these other stuff. But when you have reflection and you pray there in the cathedral, it is so beautiful. It's sometimes it can have silence in within yourself. I can't explain it. You just when you have that time for yourself to pray. And you were saying that people who are lonely, who are hopeless, even homeless people, I think people even come to the cathedral just to sit and to be there. That's a great thing. That's a great opportunity for them to just be within the confines of a spiritual place in the cathedral. I keep on saying this, but this trip Bernie and I have been on for last year, but when we went to St. Paul's in Valletta in Malta? Is it St. Paul's?
The Co-Cathedral?
Yes.
There's St. John's Co-Cathedral, I think it is.
St. John's Co-Cathedral. That's right.
Sorry, St. John's, of course, with the symbol is, of course, St. John's, the ambulance. And when we walked into there, I just went, whoa.
It's
the memories of
place.
That are vivid, aren't they?
Totally well.
Now all three of us have been there, right? Now look, here we are.
I'm not
in Australia.
I'm not
all three of us
St. Patrick's or any other cathedral, but being in a cathedral like that, whichever country you want to go to, Italy, Rome, of course, and everything. When you go to the cathedral, it is a different, or even maybe something. I can't explain it. It's an experience.
Nothing is spared for the glory of God in a cathedral. Nothing. And that's the beautiful thing about it. It's all, everything. It's not modern. It's not a modern design. It's not a pared-down design. It is everything. It's all for the glory of God, and you feel it.
Definitely.
And, Lino, you're right. It's not about, as you're saying, it's not about comparison, but I think you make a good point, is that you can remember your visits to just about every cathedral you've been. Sometimes just for the physical beauty of the space, but then some also for the spiritual experiences, the encounter with Christ you have. I was saying that, Caroline, when we were interviewed, I was talking about how St. Patrick's had been a very, going to 6:30 had been a very formative part of my own faith journey. Going there, firstly, as a youth group member, but then driving youth group members there, like to, doing trips once a month and whatever. And Lino, you know about this,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
I can remember, like, key things have happened there. I remember 2016 when the Mercy Door was open in the Year of Mercy and taking young people there and how special that was, right? Yeah. Just just last year, I had my graduation there.
Yeah, yes, your graduation.
That's right. You know, you were there.
What a traditional, beautiful ceremony that was.
But now that the end of that education is marked by St. Patrick's Cathedral by being there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not just because of it's a big place to have a graduation, but it's the center of our archdiocese, that spiritual center, that seat of the archbishop, and we were there.
Yes.
And how powerful that is to graduate, to receive that wherever and say to Christ, and this is all for
exactly.
you.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah.
So nice.
What do I do
Thank
with it
you
now?
For it's inviting for me you. To be part of that and share that with you, because it was such a beautiful moment. It really was.
Yeah, it's powerful. And all three of us, I didn't realize, but as you mentioned earlier, we've all been to St. John's Co-Cathedral in Malta at different points in our lives.
Mm.
And you remember, right?
Yeah.
I was fortunate enough to go to Notre Dame in Paris
before the fires.
So.
Yeah.
I can remember vividly. And you know what? And what's interesting is when these cathedrals around the world, a lot of them, they rope off the middle bit, the chairs, so that tourists aren't just bustling through.
Exactly. Whatever. Yeah.
And they have to walk around the sides.
Yes.
But if you're there to pray, they let you in.
Exactly.
To go into the seats. And so we felt it, myself, Isabel and Damien, when we were in Paris and went to Sacré-Cœur as well, to these places. We went into the place to pray. Not just because you get the best views there, but we didn't just go there to look, but we wanted to meet Christ during our break, our overseas break.
Yeah.
And when I say I remember, I don't just remember how beautiful it was.
No.
That's the start. But the beauty is the invitation into encountering Christ.
Exactly.
And I remember the encounter with Christ, which is so much more powerful.
Exactly.
And so I say it's great that the Archbishop and his team are thinking about how St. Pat's Cathedral can do that for the next generation, for the Zoomers, for everyone else, how it can speak their language so that they know the invitation, the face of Christ when they enter as well. So I hadn't even considered that would be the topic of his oration. But the really important thing to consider, I think.
It definitely is. Yep.
Looking forward to seeing what comes out of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Any other final reflections before we move on?
It's just an uplifting topic, I think, being able to go and listen to the oration as well. And there's always, we could probably dissect the whole oration and speak about it for many episodes, because there's so much.
We could do a few episodes on this.
I love to hear Archbishop Peter speak, because he always has some beautiful things to say. He's very reflective, and I always get a lot out of what. So thank you, Archbishop Peter, for that, for your gift and sharing that with us.
Any way we can get Archbishop Peter on our podcast, or is he?
We are working on it. He's open to it. We spoke to him on the night, and I think all of us had a desire to get back together on the podcast, including him, and we had a chat. So,
cool.
So we'll wait till Easter and everything is concluded, and then have a rest and whatever.
Yeah,
and
we'll have a break.
All good.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
We look forward to inviting him on, though.
Cool, cool.
Great.
Awesome.
Let's talk about this and so many other important topics as well. It'd be great. Sure. Yeah. All right. So again, we were grateful to be there. We definitely got something out of it. And I hope that, just like I said, in our small way, I hope that we can share that message through this podcast today. And with that in mind, let's move on and let's talk about science.
Ah, what a fine day for science.
You have any hobbies?
I collect spores, molds, and fungus.
Can you reverse the polarity?
I'll do my best.
So I have a topic which I think will be timely. I don't think it will eclipse the previous topic that we just talked about. On April the 8th, and we are, I know that it's not right to be jealous, but we are jealous Americans because
we are.
Quite a few will on April the 8th be able to experience a total solar eclipse Hopefully the weather will be nice. Usually in Melbourne, when there's an eclipse, we don't get to
it
see it.
Always the clouds will be like, just Melbourne.
It's just overcast. Yeah, exactly, guys.
Yeah. Yep. But we always see beautiful photos and videos from the United States of everyone just loving the eclipse. So good on you.
Yeah. I've been watching it through streaming. Yeah.
Yeah. So a pretty significant one. Mm. And they've been talking about this since the end of last year, started this year as well. So we've certainly been looking forward to it. On April the 8th, there is going to be a total solar eclipse that will last, I think it was from the article I've got here, 4 minutes and 27
That's
seconds.
Long.
So it's a
pretty long.
It's pretty long.
Yeah, actually, longest one in a decade. Yeah, which is great. Mm. Caroline, so just to put you on the spot really quickly, can you give us the 30 seconds? What is a total solar eclipse?
Okay, so when you get a solar eclipse, the moon will pass between the sun and the earth, and the moon is just the right size so that it will mostly cover the sun. Okay, they're obviously not the same size, but where we're looking, we can see the moon covering the sun. Yes.
Yeah, great. So when a solar eclipse happens, the science community go a little bit crazy understandably, because it is a unique and rare opportunity to study the sun's corona.
Yes.
In a way that can't be done any other way. So they do have solar observatories, things in space that are looking at the sun, with cameras that have a disc covering some of the lens so they can observe
the corona. That's one project that we've spoken about in the past. Yes.
That's right. Yep. However, that it doesn't compare to a solar eclipse.
No.
Because that particular setup doesn't allow them to observe the full, like, the sun's, is it corona? Hang on, did I get that right?
Yeah.
The full sun corona. Here are some experiments or some teams that are planning on doing some observations of the sun corona during the eclipse. They're very excited about it. So this article comes from New Scientist. I've actually got three quick articles, so I'm going to whip through these and then we'll have a quick chat. The first one is this team who are excited. They're called the Solar Wind Sherpas. At least that's what their headline says. So Shadia Habal is a social researcher at the University of Hawaii for their Institute of Astronomy. And she's been chasing solar eclipses for almost 30 years. She uses special filters and cameras to measure the temperatures of the particles from the innermost part of the corona. Habal's group, known as the Solar Wind Sherpas, has traveled to places as far afield as the Marshall Islands, Kenya, Mongolia, the Norwegian archipelago of Svalbard, Antarctica, and Libya. So they've seen a few in their lifetimes. And they've been around.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Her team. God. Yeah. It's a lot of trips. I know. Not jealous at all.
Oh, freaking so flight points in that one.
Tell you what. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. They probably get this trip for free, I wonder. Yeah.
Oh,
but anyway, this time it's in the United States. So they don't have to travel too far. And they use particular filters and cameras to look at the sun's corona. And they study the different wavelengths of light emitted by charged iron particles in the corona. And then that's how they work out the temperature there. Solar physicists usually study the corona by relying on coronagraphs from space. And we talked about how the observatories, they get a lot of things, but they don't get everything. And so Habal says that observations of the corona during the totality, that is when the moon completely covers the sun, are critical. And so she said there is no other way to see this part of the sun's atmosphere that extends from its surface to at least 5 solar radii in a continuous manner. So she said that's fundamental to understanding how the solar atmosphere starts at the sun and then extends into interplanetary space. She says only then can accurate computer models be devised that simulate the corona and help in the prediction of space. The sun is going to reach its solar maximum in 2025, so next year. So this is in its 11-year cycle. So this is one of the best opportunities to observe the sun's corona. So they've devised a few things. One thing they've got, which is really cool, and it has an Australian connection. I love this as well. So they've been burned by bad weather, as we know here in Australia. Yeah. All right. Yeah, we've seen. So she says we had rain in Chile in 2020, clouds at sea in Antarctica in 2021, and there was no eclipse in 2022. So it was during the expedition to Antarctica that they worked on the idea of having a kite equipped with a spectrometer, which separates light into its component wavelengths. So NASA funded a kite, and there's an image of it on this article, which is in our show notes, which is really cool. It has a 6.5 meter wingspan, and it was successfully tested in Western Australia.
Fantastic.
During last year's total solar eclipse. So I remember that one happening in April last year. I had a friend who sent me images. They made their own way of observing it, which is what I'm going to talk about in a minute. And they sent us photos, which was really cool. So this kite was launched on a 1 kilometer long tether attached to a vehicle. And Abal says it was pretty miraculous. Bad weather meant that the team flew it for just 45 minutes before totality. And she said it was thrilling. This is such an amazing thing to look at, guys. You have to check it out. So that's one method. Now, if that, hopefully it does work out for them. However, if that doesn't work, NASA has something else going on. It has its WB-57 aircraft. Now, these are very high altitude, high speed observation planes. They fly at 740 kilometers per hour, which is about the quarter of the speed of the moon's shadow.
Wow.
And yeah, they have cameras, I think in the front, in the nose cone, but these cameras are like omnidirectional. So they can observe very well. They can rotate and point at anything essentially. And they fly very high. So the higher in the atmosphere they can go, the better observations they can make. So I think that
sense.
They fly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think they fly at about 16 kilometers. Which is pretty high. So if you want to work out how high that is, just watch a rocket launch and watch the kilometers on the rocket and see how high that 16 kilometers. I'm pretty sure, Caroline, you can see the curvature of the Earth from there pretty well. So it's pretty high. So it's a great way to observe. So it says here that the WB-57 is perfect for this because its nose cone is a camera and telescope system that can rotate to point at anything, no matter which way the aircraft is flying. That's a really cool one. And then there's a third one. And by the way, these three attempts at observation are three of many that are going on. I can't go through all, but there are lots of people all over the world with different methods that they're going to use to try and observe this eclipse. This one I thought was pretty cool though. This one's titled The Live Streamers. So Caspi, Caspi is part of the Citizen Continental American Telescope Eclipse Project. The acronym is CATE for this project, but Caspi is attempting to make a continuous 60-minute high-resolution movie using 35 teams of citizen scientists in the path of totality from Texas through to Maine, each with the same cameras, telescopes, and training, so they can make exactly the same kinds of observations. Caspi says the teams will be spaced out so that every station is overlapped by its neighbors. If one station doesn't get data because of clouds or broken equipment, it's okay. So he's hopeful the equipment will work since it was successfully tested in Western Australia last year. So Caspi said that was the first place to be. Yeah, that was the first eclipse I've seen, says Caspi, who only got to see a few brief seconds because he was busy live streaming it on YouTube. And he says, our equipment couldn't get online, so I spent the whole time holding a phone in front of my face. So while the eclipse was going on, he was live streaming from a phone in front of his face. So those are three experiments, and I haven't gone through the whole article here, but those are three experiments I wanted to mention that are going to be observing this amazing eclipse. However, what about you, humble listener? How are you going to observe it? I found another article which will be in our show notes. This article is How to Make an Eclipse Viewer. We know that you can't stare, Caroline, at a solar
eclipse.
No, you cannot.
Because, do not do it.
Why?
No. Never
and
look directly at the sun. You will burn out your retina. It's dangerous. Do not do it.
So
always
so
wear protective gear.
Yeah. And you can purchase glasses and particular things to allow you to observe the eclipse. Be careful when you purchase things online because sometimes it might be advertised as being able to observe an eclipse. Yeah. But
make
not
sure
actually
they
good
are
enough
to standard.
To do it.
Yeah. I heard this on the American, I was watching the American news, and they did warn about just buying anything. Make sure that they are to standard. They should have a standard associated with them.
Yes. So just make sure it's not for some shonky seller who says, hey, I've got eclipse glasses and they're not that good. Yeah. So here's a way that you can safely do it yourself. You can there are two methods. You can make a pinhole camera. So with this viewer, all you need is some paper, aluminium foil, scissors, and a pen. You cut a hole in the middle of one piece of paper and then cover it in foil. You stick the foil in place and punch a small hole in the middle of it using a pen, needle, or sharp object. On the day of the eclipse, all you have to do is hold this up to the sun and place a second piece of paper on the ground underneath. a bright little dot will appear on the second piece of paper. This is a projection of the sun. As the eclipse progresses, the moon covers more of the sun, you will see the shape of the dot change. Now, I've seen this myself because my friend who was in Western Australia last year in Perth did this with her family, and she sent photos of this piece of paper. I'm like, what am I looking at? And there's, I'm like, oh my gosh, that's a projection of the eclipse.
Cool.
So you can actually make your own little projection, and you don't. All you need is things that you can find around your house.
Cool.
Another way is to make a box eclipse viewer. So this one works in the same way, but the projection will appear inside a box instead of on the ground. So for this, all you need is paper, foil, scissors, and a cardboard box. So for example, a cereal box or a shoe box will work well. And what I love about these two projects is that you can do them with your kids if you want to. It's a fun little project that you can do together. So what it says is line one inner side of the box with white paper, then cut two holes in the opposite side, spacing them far apart. Tape a piece of foil over one hole and poke a small hole in it. The other hole will be where you look through. On the day of the eclipse, hold the viewer up to your eye with the sun behind you. A projection of the sun should appear inside the box on the white paper you lined it with. That is so cool. I love
Very
that.
Very cool.
How great is it? So you hold the box to your eye. Yeah, that's right. So you hold the box and you look in one hole and you point the foil at the sun so the sun's behind you.
You get a reflection.
The box. It's like wearing, yeah. So those are some, if you're like, oh no, I didn't buy glasses, I missed. Here's a way that you can quickly do it. But plan ahead because you've only got 4 minutes and 27 seconds when it passes in your region.
Yeah.
True.
Yeah.
That is
so
true.
So it'll be in parts of North America. And listeners, we expect you to share some photos if you have any or images of what you've done in the Let's Science Discord channel.
Yeah.
All right. So hopefully we'll see some of that. That'd be cool. And we'll be, obviously, Caroline and Lino, we'll be watching
live streaming
on YouTube.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Totally watching. Yeah, we'll be watching it for sure, which is really cool.
Yep.
So, yeah. And lastly, go.
I'll jump in.
No, you go. I'll show this in a second.
So just from watching past eclipses streamed, and there's streams that will have a commentary. So I thought I'd mention a couple of physical things that are awesome when you're experiencing one of these solar eclipses.
Yep.
So obviously we all know when it's a total eclipse, it will go dark. So all of a sudden there'll be no light. It's as if it's nighttime. Another thing also that the temperature will drop. So you actually start to feel cooler. So they do measure the temperature drop during the time as well.
Yeah.
So
Yeah.
You may be blazing hot 1 minute, but you're going to feel a lot cooler the next minute while it's in totality.
Totally,
really cool. And I wish too that it was happening here because earlier in the year, I purchased an awesome little telescope that.
Of course.
The C-Star S50 that you don't look through it with your eyes, but you actually connect with your phone. So it's a complete Wi-Fi setup and you look.
Oh, wow.
With an app on your phone and it comes with a solar filter. And one of the best things that I've ever seen was to look at the sunspots through the app on my phone.
Wow.
And
so
you can actually watch the sun live. Like you can also film it. You can take photos through the app and just watching the sun bubbling away. And you can zoom in on the sunspots.
Oh,
that's where the flares are coming out of.
Yeah, coming
so
out.
Good. So good.
I wish I could take that thing over. I'm sure there's a lot of people. Yeah. It's a very popular little instrument, and I'm sure that many people are going to be using it. If anyone's using it at the time and you've got one, please send some footage or photos and show us what it looks like.
I am sure that there is a population, a section of the community like us, of the world community, who if Netflix or Amazon Prime or someone just had a continuous live stream as one of their shows of the sun, the moon,
100%.
Other celestial bodies and whatever, that we would just leave it on and watch it for a long time. Just like those videos of trains on tracks and boats and rivers. SBS was doing this for a while.
Yeah.
I used to love it. I'd watch for half an hour and then realize, it's been that long. I've been on this train trip it's great.
It's like staring at a fish tank forever. It's just so interesting.
It is interesting though. It's mesmerizing. A bit like being in a cathedral. See, there you go. It's the same thing. This one isn't scientific and it's just a little footnote to add, but I just wanted to talk about what some people, at least 300 people, will be doing during the eclipse. Nearly 300 couples are planning on getting married on the day of the solar eclipse.
There you go. They'll be
joining each other, all right, together to say their vows before the sky goes completely dark in a mass wedding in Russellville in Arkansas. The Total Eclipse of the Heart, an annual musical festival.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Look, is offering.
Look, I love the song, guys. It's cheesy. I gotta say it is cheesy, but
that's what they're,
it sounds
that's
good.
What they're calling
sounds
it. All right. Yep. So they are offering what they call a unique once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for astro-loving partners. Now, Caroline, you're an astro-loving partner, you and Phil, aren't you? For different reasons, aren't you?
Yeah.
Because you have a dog called Astro.
Astronomy. So I love my dog called Astro. Yeah.
That's what I was getting at. Yeah. All right. It says that this way they can declare their love for each other to the moon and back.
Oh, there declare their love. Oh, okay. Yeah, look.
That's right.
You have that opportunity. No, you just do it. Sounds like a great idea.
Yeah. There you go. So it says here, the wedding ceremony is completely free with a wedding officiant providing along with decorations, flowers, a wedding cake, and a bottle of sparkling fruit drink.
Oh.
Those getting married
I don't know about that.
Licenses.
Sounds too good to be true. Yep. What's going on?
Yeah,
there has to be something hidden there. Come on.
Vow renewals. Would that be okay?
Yeah.
Renewals.
Yeah, you could do that. Yeah. I'm sure. Yeah.
Hey, why not?
It says those getting married just have to bring their own licenses, although first 100 couples who registered had this reimbursed by the festival. This is pretty good, isn't it?
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah. So there you go. One of these couples, Carlotta Cox and Matthew Holloway from Knoxville, Tennessee, congratulations, by the way, said they wanted to take advantage of the free wedding and experience being in the path of totality. So,
okay.
So anyway, the article goes on. There's a few puns in there and whatever else. And then it talks about NASA's guidelines about not
staring at the sun. Of course, eclipse, of course, of course.
Yeah. So anyway, I just thought I'd add that as a little footnote to what we know at least 300 people will be doing on the day of the eclipse. There's going to be a mass wedding. Ooh, congratulations.
What else would you do during an eclipse? Sounds
eclipse.
Obvious.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Good luck to them, nerds. Yeah. Yeah, it'll certainly be unforgettable. Yeah.
Hey, look, if I had thought of it, I would have done it as well.
You'd want to have
a song because
you'd
want to hire a photographer, your own personal photographer, so that you could stand together and have the eclipse
Star
behind
man.
You. Or
I mean, that would be a good one too. The sun's
yeah, there
oh,
you go.
Star
yeah,
Man's
Star
great.
Man. Yeah,
yeah.
Be a few. Yeah,
Bowie. What not?
Yep. Yeah.
That's more to my taste.
Caroline, did you want to, being our chief scientist on this podcast, did you want to add anything else to close this one off?
No, just total regrets that we didn't get married during a solar eclipse. That's it, pretty much.
It's very hard to plan. It's very hard to plan.
It is,
yes. Very challenging, All right, With that in mind,
we're getting... to come and, would have been...
Yeah, invite
everyone
and,
to America.
Yep.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it would have been very difficult. Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. With that in mind, I think we might close off the show here because we're getting a bit over time. We want to thank everyone for joining us for episode 116 of The Catholics of Oz. We're grateful that you were here to listen. Before we go, though, we'd like to take a moment to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create this show. Today, we would love to thank Aaron D, Jacob D, Susan M, Jacob H, and Jody S. Through their generous donations at sqpn.com/give, they make it possible for the Catholics of Oz and all of the other shows on StarQuest to continue. You can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. We'd love to know your thoughts about the topics we discussed today. Are you taking photos of the eclipse? Are you getting married during the eclipse? Let us know. You can send feedback by visiting sqpn.com/oz. where you can find all the links for today's show. You can find us on SQPN's Discord, sqpn.com/discord. Sign up there if you haven't already. And don't forget all the socials, facebook.com/StarQuestMedia, at SQPN on Twitter, and StarQuest Media on Instagram. Sometimes I struggle to remember all of these. And you can flick us a good old email, catholicsofoz@sqpn.com. Remember that Oz is spelt O-Z. And lastly, don't forget to sign up for SQPN's newsletter if you haven't done that, sqpn.com/about/newsletter. Caroline, thank you so much for joining us for episode 116.
Thank you. It's been stellar.
And Lido, thank you so much as well.
It has been totally awesome, guys. Yes. Wow. Cathedrals and space. Oh, so connecting in a spiritual way.
Good mix, really.
It's a good mix.
It is. Yeah, cathedrals and eclipses. It's all about light today, isn't it?
It is.
So that's our thing. So there you go.
Yeah. Definitely we need light.
Yep.
Definitely need light.
Perfect. And a happy Easter. For us, it's Easter tomorrow. It would be past Easter when this releases, but everyone had a... Happy and blessed Easter.
But it will be the Easter season. Yeah, it will be the Easter season. So a very happy Easter to you all, and Christ is risen. So let's enjoy the joy of that as we now count down to Pentecost. So that's the next. I've got the Ascension and Pentecost coming up. Those are our next big ones. With that, thank you so much for listening. God bless you all. I'm Lindsay Sant, and thank you for joining us for episode 116 of The Catholics of Oz on StarQuest.
Here's another show on the StarQuest network you're sure to enjoy, The Secrets of Middle-Earth. Find it wherever you can find podcasts or at sqpn.com/Middle-Earth. We'd like to thank Patrick McCaffrey of Moonshadow Studios for editing this episode. To have your audio edited professionally and with care, check out more of Patrick's work at moonshadowstudios.biz. That's moonshadowstudios.biz.